Okay, and we are back with a sort of technical workaround. If you're just tuning in, I'm your host, Rasha McChesney. We're doing a full hour of Juno Afternoon with Brian Wallace, a noted local photojournalist. And we're just getting into the part of his career where he's decided that New York is not going to be friendly to his fashion photography, but he got an internship with Mark Kelly at the Juno Empire. And how long were you at the Empire?
Well, I was an intern. I did like kind of was kind of on call for the first several years. Then Mark went to Ohio University, so they needed a photographer for a full year. So I covered for that, and he came back. And then I was just pretty much on call. And then late 1980s, 89 or 90, I became full time, and then was there for a full time photographer ever since after that.
Okay, so your work at the Empire is actually how I came to know you as a photographer, because I worked at another newspaper in the state when I first came here. And so when we were going through your photos, as a student of Polish history, this photo just lodged in my brain. You have number 7. You have this photo of Governor Jay Hammond speaking in front of a Solidarity banner. What is going on there? Is he Polish? Is he an anti-communist? What's happening there?
Well, this was a rally the day before the general election in 1982 when Juno was fighting for its life. It was all about the Capitol move that year. You know, when I first came on, the majority of Alaskans voted early on to move the Capitol from Juno to Willow, and the whole community was rallying to fight that tooth and nail. And it didn't look good for the first several months, but you know, the night before, it looked like we might actually pull this off. And, you know, Governor Hammond led a march up the street. This was in front of the Capitol. And he made a speech saying, you know, like, you know, the Anchorage Times said, if I ever get elected, the Capitol will never move from Juneau. And he says, well, let's hope for once that yellow rag is correct. So the next night, Juneau pulled it off. You know, it's like this great sigh of relief. It's like the town was reborn the next day after that. You know, it was all this like glum, dark, that was like, it was unsettled. You know, everybody thought it was going to be end of times for Juno. And then we pulled it off. So I felt great to be part of that, taking photos and helping out with the cause there, because the Juno Empire was definitely anti-capital move.
Okay. Yeah, that's definitely, I guess, solidarity forever in Juno with not having to move to the Capitol. And you have this other photo. Is that the Majestic Explorer looking not quite so majestic on? Is that a reef? What's going on there?
The Majestic Explorer ran up on a reef in Frederick Sound. And this happened like not too long after Mark Kelly was out of town. Like, first, I was just like the intern. You know, just this kid that I had to be helped along, you know, taken by the hand, shown how to do stuff. And then I said, okay, I'll be able to cover for you when you leave town. And then he left, and like literally 15 minutes, I was down at the waterfront to take pictures of Mel Flood being welcomed to town. You know, he became the longtime director of the Juno Symphony. So the marching band and other musicians were there to greet him with music and fanfare. I took a few photos of that, and then I heard a car honking and heard my name being yelled out by Debbie Reinwand, one of the reporters. And she says, oh my God, Brian, we got to go to the airport. And I was like, what for? Like, a cruise ship has run aground. It's in distress. And there's an airplane waiting for us to take us there. And I says, great. You know, just, I was like, it was like my call to glory. It's like, right this moment. So like, we get on the plane, on the small plane, and we're flying over Juno. I take a few shots of the city. I turn around and I photograph Debbie, because like she's a very elegant lady, and she dressed in Norma Kamali outfits. And I know Norma Kamali because I was trying to be a fashion photographer, and I studied different looks and cuts to wow people. So that was the only time I was able to use that knowledge. So I photograph her in Norma Kamali outfit, and I figure out I better look in my camera bag to just see how many rolls of film I have to do this job. So here I am flying to the most important news story in my life, and maybe the most important news story in the Western world. And I look in my camera bag, and there's no film. all that was the roll of Tri-X film that was in my camera. I took maybe 10 or 15 photos and my blood ran cold. Not just cold, but it went to absolute zero for a few moments. And
every single one of us has shown up.
I'm trying to think, like, what kind of excuses can I give? And I looked down, at the camera counter, and I said I had anywhere between 12 and 15 photos. We arrive at scene, and the Coast Guard hadn't closed the airspace yet. So we were able to get down low, and we did one pass, and I took out a 5 or 6 photos, and I says, please come out, please come out. And then we landed, and then I took, taxied in the water close to a fishing vessel that had passengers that they rescued from the Majestic Explorer. I took a couple photos of that. Then we pulled up to another boat, and I jumped off the plane onto the back of the boat, and I took the last of the photos, and then I got swarmed by the crew members of the Majestic Explorer. They were trying to pull my camera and grab it as hard as they can. And they hustled me off that plane. They hustled me off the back of the boat and onto the plane. We take off and it was a float plane. So we landed in Gastineau Channel. I said, to save time, instead of going to the airport, I said, hey, land at the channel. And then I'm running up to the Empire out of breath. And the whole time I'm praying oh God, please let something come out. I just needed something in focus to save my life. How am I going to tell the managing editor, the publisher, everybody how I blew it? I process the film and I show up and I'm all excited and out of breath. Carl Sampson, the managing editor, said, sit down, take a deep breath, relax for 2 or 3 minutes before you go in there. I don't want you in the dark room in the state you're at. So I relax for a bit. And then he says, all right, deadline's in 25 minutes. I expect a good print from you in 25 minutes. Oh God, I come in, I process the film. And I dry it and I look at it, I bring it out and I edit it. And there's one in focus. There's one good one here. There's two good ones here. There's three good ones here. So my God, I did it. I did it. I cut it and I processed the film and I ran it. I ran the wet prints up to Carl and he says, great job. And then this is the first photo that I had that ran worldwide on the Associated Press. And it was on the front page of Seattle Times, buried in front page of pretty much all the West Coast newspapers. I had missed a deadline for the New York Times. So I was kind of bummed about that. But I mean, I felt like this is it. I'm one day I was the most important photographer in the world. And I was just like,
Brian, I want to interject here because I think one, the lesson that you learned there is one that I think all photographers have to learn. I had a habit in my first year as a photojournalist of showing up with batteries that weren't fully charged and then having to get a few frames off the dying battery. Yeah. But you had this shining moment of being all over the world. I remember very clearly the first time I got a photo published on the AP and my grandmother from several states away called to say she found it in the paper. But then this next photo, this is photo number 9. This is 22 feet in the air. Tell me what it was like to show up to a basketball game, a local basketball game, as the most famous photographer in the world.
Well, I remember not long after this, I had to go photograph the city championship between Marie Drake and Floyd Dryden Junior High. A couple months before, I was the most important photographer in the world. And I said, oh God, I got to go photograph a junior high girls basketball game, the insult. It's you're asking Leonardo da Vinci to paint a house blue or something. And I'm sitting there, I'm sitting there, I'm feeling I'm real important. Why am I here? But I get there and there's an excitement in the air. I went to Marie Drake and I know the feeling when you play the rival school, how intense it could get. Mark Kelly told me one of the lessons I had to do was get a safe shot. I got a photograph of a girl shooting a free throw, which would have pretty much been okay to publish. Then I decided to hang out a little bit longer than I thought. And then all of a sudden, Marie Drake was down and Coach Andy Lee called some timeouts and they started clawing their way back. And I said, oh my God, they might Marie Drake, they might pull it off. And I get in position to photograph an action shot. And a referee steps in front of me. There's no movement. The sideline's crammed. There's nowhere to move. And I just swing the camera and I point it at the bench. and I blast off photos as the girl for Marie Drake shot the winning shot. I didn't get the winning shot of her making the basket, but this is the reaction. 22 feet in the air, and that one, Alaska Press Club and Sigma Delta Chi sports photo of the year. So, yeah. So that was important again.
Brian, really quickly, I feel like I could spend all of the time in the world talking to you about your professional career as a photojournalist, because I have a lot of passion about that job and about you doing it. And I think people can go look and see this photo of the Yorktown Clipper. But I really want to get to these last couple of photos that we have here. And so I want to just make the point that for a second, you and I have talked a lot about these moments in time in which you were capturing history for Juneau. I think one of the original photos that you showed me was one of the Prince and Dom, actually, in Juneau's harbor. And I feel like, did you know that you were making history while you were documenting it? Did you know that how momentous these moments were? Or were you just, you know, a kid taking photos?
You know, at the time, I was just living moment to moment. You know, today is a great day, but tomorrow you got to find something new. But all of a sudden, like, as I got older, so wow, these photos are just, they're more than just, you know, images, they're history. And that was kind of my driving force. Like from then on, it's like, I'm preserving moments in time for future generations to see. You know, it's kind of like Winter and Podden, Casey and Draper, you know, and other Juneau photographers. So like, right, I like having that impact on the historical record of Juneau and the family record, you know.
Going through your photos, I mean, that photo of the Yorktown Clipper, I think you told me that, you know, before she was mayor, Beth Weldon was there. You have so many images of people, you know, have been in town for decades. And I feel like you watched this entire town grow up around you, and your family have documented a good chunk of it, including Celebration. You've been Celebration's, you know, official photographer for almost 20 something years now.
Since it started. I mean, not the official photographer since it started, but I was at the first Celebration. I've been to every Celebration, and then became pretty much the official photographer. Like after I got laid off, you know, I was driving home and I got a call, and they, Sea Alaska Heritage, first they said, well, we got some assignments for you, and then would you like to be a photographer for Celebration? And then I said, hey, I got my camera. I love the subject, and so I'm there.
Well, this 11th photo that we have in this slideshow, and you guys can follow along at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. The 11th photo is this Northwest Coast Dance Group, and this is among this set. This is probably my favorite photo in this whole set that we're talking about today. There is this sort of otherworldly feel to this photo, and I feel like I can see this story dancing right at me, right off the page. Can you tell me a little bit about taking this photo?
Yeah, it's during Celebration. It's during, there's a real popular dance group in the Seattle area called the Get Home Dancer, the People of the Salmon. And from the left, it's Tristan Dames, and then David Boxley was wearing the transformation mask, and Tiffany Williams, and it's the climactic moment. You know, first off, I think if I remember right, this is the very first time he performed in Celebration with this transformation mask. Everybody was like oohing and aahing when it came out, and it builds to this climax when he, you know, first off, he dances around as they're singing with the killer whale mask, and then at that decisive moment, he swings the open, it transforms to this man, and the girls blow the goose down. And like, you know, I blasted some photos, and I looked down, you know, it's called chimping, how you look at your LCD screen. This is, oh my God, I think I got the ultimate photo of Celebration right now. This is like, you know, I wouldn't think of time, this is what I'm going to be remembered for. But you know, if it turns out to be the phone I'm remembered for, this is, I'm happy. I can't get over how happy and proud I am of this photo.
I can see, and I feel like this is something that we can see in the evolution of all photojournalists, is the sort of moment at which you begin to photograph things that you have a personal connection to, and how powerful those photos can be. And this next photo, number 12, is the totem pole outside of the Juno Museum, and there's this beam of light that just seems like you couldn't have photoshopped it in there better. Tell me about this moment. How did that happen? How did you capture that?
Well, the photo, the totem pole is called the Harnessing the Atom Totem that my dad carved in 1968. And it was standing in front of the Juno City Museum for decades, you know, since 1968. And then Ellen Carley, you know, conservator, the totem pole was brought down for her to work on it. Maybe 10, 15 years ago, it was a few months before my dad died. And we brought him down to look at the totem, like one of his final outings, to watch Ellen work on it. And then I wanted to bring him down there to bring the totem pole as they erected the totem pole again, but he was too sick. So I got there late. They held up the work to put it back up so my dad can get there. But I'm sorry, Dad, Dad couldn't come. And she put the totem pole up, she directed it, and she pushed it into the position. And, it was in the shade, but, the sunshine poked out, and I think it was reflecting off a window of Ellen and her late husband's house, and that one beam of light shone down onto the portion of the totem pole that resembles the sun. And, I was dumbfounded. I wasn't taking pictures. I didn't check in, and then some guy next to me says, "Wow, look at that. The sun's on it." And that woke me up from this trance, and I jumped it up and I just motored. Now, I took maybe 30, 40 photos of this image, and I just I had nothing to do with it. All I had to do was be there with the camera, and everything just kind of fell into place. All I had to do was make sure it was in focus.
This photo just feels like an impossibility to me, like one of those moments where you just go, it can't be a coincidence. That must be somehow guided. And there's one more photo that I want to talk about, because I feel like you sort of captured these moments for yourself and for your father and for your family and also for the whole community of Juno. And this last photo is, I think you called it, "The Heat is On." And it's from gold medal, this basketball tournament that I think a lot of us have sort of seen over the years. First of all, it's vertical, which every print designer on the planet really hates seeing. But tell me about this photo and capturing it and what it means to the community that you were also documenting gold medal for so long.
Yeah, well, gold medal, I think Al Kukesh summed up gold medal the best. He said, the Muslims go to Mecca, and each March we go to Juno for gold medal. So a gold medal is more than just basketball. It's a meeting for family. It's you're preparing for the year. You're preparing, you're just getting to all together to see friends and do battle on court. And then, do your annual shopping trip to Juno, meet family and friends. But this year it had something more, the village of Cake, they had two or three horrible tragedies in a row that they were recovering from. A beloved leader died of cancer, and I think a couple of men were lost fishing, lost at sea fishing. And so that was weighing heavy, nothing was ever going to bring him back, but this game was the most incredible gold medal game I've ever been to. And, Haynes and the Tlingit Heat were battling, it came down to whoever's going to have the last basket, the last possession. And Haynes had the ball, and they shot, and by some miracle for Cake, they missed. The ball rimmed out, and right at the buzzer, I got this photo of the two players celebrating. And it was just I called them. I didn't have a cell phone. I raced out to the Empire as fast as I could, and they had already designed the paper for a horizontal photo. And I says, "Guys, you gotta reconsider. You gotta redesign this." I got this vertical shot, and they came over and looked. "Oh, we'll look," and all of a sudden they looked as, "Oh my God, we'll do it." So,
speaking of buzzers, I'm so sorry to cut you off. I'm having so much fun, but you can see all of these photos at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. Brian, thank you so much. I just want to say as we close, our theme music is by Indian Agent. And to revisit this interview and see the images we discussed or to be on the show yourself, check out our website at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. And what a great time. Thanks, Brian. We really appreciate having you.
Thank you very much. It was an honor to be here.